This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are tuned to Front Row, the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. You may or may not have noticed the number of classical music events taking place in the Klang Valley. Just this past weekend, a grand performance of Bach's Mass in B minor was staged with 14 classically trained singers from Singapore, Hong Kong, the USA, Malaysia. They were accompanied by musicians from Thailand, Japan, including Malaysians called back from abroad as far as Sweden. One a bit closer from Singapore. Coming up this weekend in Johor Bahru is the JB Classical Music Festival, and we'll hear more about that tomorrow. And this weekend at KLPAC, the KLPAC Orchestra will play To Beethoven with Love. Is there something in the Malaysian waters? I have with me three pianists who will be playing in this weekend's completely Beethoven, the piano concerto cycle.
Yeah, Beethoven Complete, I think it says. Is it Chapter 11, not Beethoven Complete.
Oh, I thought it was completely Beethoven. I must have misread it.
Same meaning.
Same meaning. And I have with me Lu Ban Hien, Sylvia Low, and Carolyn Low.
Hello.
Hello.
Is there something in the Malaysian waters that we have all these music events happening? And it appears to me, too, that we have a lot of classically trained musicians.
I think there are now more than ever classically trained musicians who's come back from abroad and so on. And I suppose it's a good thing that there's more classical events than before. And hopefully they're well attended, and hopefully that means the appreciation for classical music is growing.
Well, the one I attended last night, Bach Mass in B minor, it was
full. That's good.
And I assume the night before on Saturday was equally full. And that bodes well. I think the church also helped push the program.
Yes, because it's a mass.
With more musicians, are there more jobs? Is there more work?
It depends, I suppose. There's always a lot of work in terms of teaching and so on. But performing opportunities, I suppose there are more now than before. But there are also more musicians, trained musicians coming back more than before. So I don't know whether it's pretty much the same or more opportunities.
It feels each year that I've been doing this program, I'm hearing more, I'm seeing more new faces. I see younger people, not to say that.
That doesn't include me, that I know. Okay, let the younger faces speak now then.
You're laughing. Are more of your peers coming back? Are you seeing also younger people? And you're also teaching, right?
Actually, I just came back this year. Germany. Stayed for 10 years, actually, Salio. And yeah, I'm surprised to see so many concerts going on and many kids are learning piano nowadays. At least one instrument.
Well, I think the response has been quite positive for the past 3 to 5 years or so. And, with more supportive public as well. And I think the organizers also try to create appreciation towards classical music, where, you know, nowadays, kids, youngsters, teenagers, they're more exposed to pop. So I think one of our goals also to organize concerts like this is to basically, well, not to say introduce, but to kind of like, you know, inculcate the culture of classical music into them.
Now, Caroline, you mentioned that there are more young people picking up classical instruments. Why is that?
So as what Ban Hien mentioned earlier, is that Malaysians who study abroad, they are all, I mean, not all, but quite a number of them over the past 3 years or so are returning back to our homeland. And I think this is much to our gain, you know, for the local music scene. And of course, like we say, you know, as a musician, the stable income comes from teaching. If you have good teachers here, parents would be exposed to better music, also better teaching. So when you have the opportunity, why not? So, you know, they send their children for classes. And then with the classes, when your teachers perform, obviously, you know, you'll be inspired. And I think this is one of the ways to also inspire the younger generation to see where they can actually expand their musical horizons, not just practicing, but also to the concert stage.
What is interesting is I keep reading about the decline of classical music in some parts of the world, meaning that full-time orchestras are being disbanded. There are fewer such things around. What was the scene like in Germany, Sylvia?
Exactly like what you just mentioned. Yes, they merged orchestras to save cost, mainly. And yeah, the younger generations tend to attend pop concerts more than classical. And usually when we go to classical concerts, you see older people in general.
Yeah, older audiences. I've heard that about overseas. But I suppose in Malaysia, we are kind of...
We're emerging economy, so we're just hitting our stride right now.
Yeah, you're putting it nicely. I was going to say we are kind of 30 years behind the rest of the world. So
there's a lot of hope for us.
Oh, yeah, we are still on the way up.
Yeah.
They are on the way down, that sort of thing. Yeah, I think awareness has grown quite a lot. There are a lot more community orchestras and so on. I mean, I remember, oh dear, now I sound old. When I was young... the first time I actually played a concerto was the first time I actually heard a live orchestra. I've never heard a live orchestra until I was actually playing with them. Whereas now, there are so many orchestras
what
around.
What year was that?
You do want to know how old I am, don't you? That was probably in the 90s. No, actually 80s. 80s.
Wow.
Yes, when some of them were just born.
You feel like we are on the upward trend right now.
Yes,
and what's also interesting is, as musicians, beyond teaching, the performance should also give you some kind of remuneration. Based on the number of concerts, one would assume that the remuneration is not the driver.
Oh, definitely yeah? not.
it's really, in a way, very wonderful to see there are so many concerts. And notwithstanding this whole issue about funding, we see people out there performing.
Yeah, I think, I suppose somehow we find a way. If we really do want to pay our bills and so on, we sit at home and teach and do nothing else. Organizing a concert, inculcates a lot of cost. And so, yeah, to make it work, one has to, take a balance between keeping the price of the tickets, realistic, and then there's the cost of venues, instrument rental, and so on. So it all adds up to quite a lot. So unfortunately, that means for the performers, it is kind of what's left after all those.
Sylvia, for you, you've been in Germany, you've just come back. How important is performing? Is it important for you to be on stage with a piano, people listening to you while
yes,
you
of
perform?
Course.
Why?
Because that's why we practice, to share the music with people. It's not just for our own studio. And we want to perform for people.
There's a part about being in the arts, the performative part is important.
Oh, yes. And also, I think when we perform, we learn so much more about ourselves and about the art of performing. You can read all sorts of books and have a teacher tell you about the performing experience, but there's nothing like doing it yourself. And you learn about it and you try to impart those knowledge to your students as well.
But then when you say you learn about yourself, is that learning about yourself technically, about how you're playing, or you learn about yourself in some existential way?
I think both, really. You learn about how you do under pressure. You learn about yourself as a person, how good you are at multitasking, organizing, how good you are at performing under pressure. And also you learn whether you can play a difficult passage under pressure or not. So the technical side as well. As a whole, quite a lot of different things about yourself.
I know at the start I said we'll start this interview by talking about Beethoven. We haven't quite gone there yet, so yeah. We'll have to make time for that. I'm speaking with Lu Banhian, Sylvia Low, and Carolyn Low. All three of them will be playing at the Selangor Philharmonic Orchestra's 2-day concert titled Beethoven Complete Piano Concertos.
That's right.
Coming up, we'll learn more about the music that they will be performing and the complete piano concerto cycle. This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, speaking with three pianists who'll be performing in the Selangor Philharmonic Orchestra's concert over this weekend, Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. It's a two-day concert. You cannot just go to one day and get the whole cycle. So five pianists will be playing five Beethoven piano concertos. Three of them are here: Sylvia Low, Lu Banghian, and Carolyn Low. Why Beethoven? I'm asking this question because you guys are playing Beethoven this weekend. KL Pack is playing Beethoven this weekend. And if I'm not mistaken, sometime earlier this year or sometime later this year, there's going to be another Beethoven.
I think there was a Beethoven yesterday as well. Yesterday. Or day before.
Yeah. Why?
I have no idea, because it's, well, as you said, it's the 190th anniversary of his death, although I'm not sure why anybody would celebrate 190.
Yeah, you wait till 200, right? Then it would be something worthwhile celebrating.
But 10 years is too long a wait, I suppose. And no Beethoven idea. Is always great music. And I think for the public here, I think they will appreciate Beethoven.
What about his music in particular that makes him stand out?
Let's ask the youngsters.
As a person, he was very temperamental.
And the thing we like temperamental music.
And the thing is because, you know, his music develops through his age. And when we study about Beethoven, I think from his music, even if you don't really know the much history of his life, you'll be able to tell what has been going on during his lifetime. It's a good experience if you attend this concert, because we will be actually playing from the first concerto right till the fifth concerto. And from the sequence...
And in that order.
In that order. But something really peculiar about this is that the second concerto, which I will be playing, it's actually composed...
Number one.
Yeah,
earlier.
The first. Mm. So, you know, if you pay attention to these details, like the orchestration and stuff, you'll be able to tell that chronologically it was not composed according to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but it was 2 first and then 1 and then so on. So from the music itself... His life is reflected in the music, and his music in general, it's much more dramatic than his contemporaries. So I think to be able to understand his music, you are also able to understand what he has gone through during his lifetime.
Are you suggesting, Carolyn, that other composers aren't quite so temperamental, therefore their music isn't so emotional and therefore less engaging?
Not really, actually, because I think for him, in the sense that, I mean, if you're talking about these five piano concertos, yeah, because it was written during his lifespan. And from the writing, you're able to tell, I think.
And I think, I suppose for us common people, it's possibly easier to identify with Beethoven, the person. Because for him, unlike Mozart, who composing comes quite easily, Beethoven actually struggled quite a lot with his compositions. He made, you know, drafts after drafts, revision after revision. The part of struggle and eventual triumph, or sometimes not, comes across quite a lot in his symphonies, his concertos and so on. And there's always this sort of opposite extremes of really turbulent or really kind of muscular music, plus, you know, something really serene, really sublime.
It's the fact that he was deaf in the latter part of his life, and yet he kept on composing, somehow make him more heroic and therefore more compelling for us to want to listen to his music.
I think so. I think everybody loves a tragic story. So for him, for example, I think the first three concertos, he composed it for himself and he performed it. But by the fourth and certainly the fifth, he couldn't, because by that time he was almost fully, completely deaf. So somebody else had to perform it. But he kept on writing because he hears music in his, I suppose, what we call inner ear. And he's not the easiest of composer to play, because he doesn't compose what lies well under the hands for a pianist or violinist and so on. He composes what he wants, and in some ways he doesn't quite care about the struggles of a performer. I mean, he actually did say that at some point. So it is difficult intentionally sometimes.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I read a contemporary of his describe his music as very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
To the point that it's impossible.
I think at that time, yeah, quite a lot of his music is considered unplayable, some of his string quartets and his late sonatas. And I mean, he was quite a groundbreaking composer. And I think without him, we probably wouldn't have had people like Chopin, Schumann, you know, all these later Brahms and so on.
But then you just mentioned that during his time, some of these pieces were impossible. Why is it possible now? Not that human beings have suddenly gotten 11 fingers or 12 fingers.
Well, the instrument has developed quite a lot now. And I suppose there's much more study of technique and so on nowadays. I suppose when he first composed some of the pieces, nobody ever thought of playing or composing in that sort of technique. So nobody has tried it yet. So everybody takes a look at it and think that it's impossible. But of course, he did perform it. And well, later, on hindsight, people study, learn, practice, and develop their technique according, well, also along with the development of the piano. And so now it's possible, but still difficult.
So a matter of time has gone by, people spending time really looking at his score and then developing
a technique. And also the
technique.
Yes.
Now let's look at this, the concerto. The term concerto, what does it mean?
Over to the youngsters.
It's an orchestral work with soloists. Could be violinist, pianist, cellist, and in this case, it's piano.
And how would that be different from a piano sonata?
Piano sonata is just piano alone.
When you have a symphony, then it's
just orchestral.
Orchestral.
Yes. So piano concerto is a combination of piano and the orchestra.
Where the piano is the featured instrument. So when you have a violin as the featured instrument, you can have a violin concerto.
Yeah, so they stand in the middle in the limelight. And it's kind of like sometimes it can be a battle of the forces between one soloist against the full orchestra, David and Goliath. Sometimes it can be working together as one full force. Or sometimes it can be quite intimate, like chamber music between the piano and the orchestra. All these elements are in there in the concertos.
Now you are playing all five. The first day, which is on a Saturday, first two or first three?
First three,
and the last two will be played on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Who's kicking off with the first one?
She's not here. That would be Chi Su Yan. One of our colleagues.
Okay. So we'll start with you, Carolyn. You are playing number two, which you said actually was composed first. What can you tell us about this music in terms of its temperament, in terms of its mood?
Well, I think this second concerto, as I mentioned earlier, it was his first ever piano concerto composed. And it was composed when he was a teenager. So, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, full of fire, carefree, basically not so dark yet. So basically, if you're just going to listen to it, it's kind of a little bit Mozartian. But at the same time, you also...
Mozart.
Oh. It sounded a little bit like Mozart. So
I missed the Mo.
Sorry. Yeah. And also a little bit of Haydn, because Haydn was Beethoven's teacher. Yeah. It's a little lighter in terms of orchestration as well. So you wouldn't be able to hear like trumpets and timpanis. And one very significant difference from the rest of it is that the span of the range of notes... because of the instrument at that time. So you're talking about, you know, around 1790s to about early 1800s. Yeah, and during that time, the keyboard instrument had a range that was up to F, right? But interestingly enough, the condenser that I'll be playing on the concert night was written 20 years after he composed the concerto. You might think like, you know, 20 years, oh wow, for us 20 years is a long time. Yeah, but for them, you know, to develop the piano, it also takes a long time. So basically, if you listen to the cadenza, the range of the notes actually expanded to much more than the F. If you would compare the cadenza and the whole body of the first movement, it is a little bit out of context in terms of the range. That's something that one should notice.
Now you're going to ask, what is a cadenza? Right?
Right.
Yeah, you guys introduce all this very technical jargon of your profession. People out there don't know, you know?
Yeah.
People in here don't know. Or this person in here doesn't know.
Right. As Sylvia mentioned earlier, the concerto features a soloist. So be it a pianist or a violinist or a saxophonist, whatever, you know, you feature somebody important. Okay, so in this case, the pianist. And a cadenza is actually a passage where basically the soloist would show his or her skills.
Everybody goes silent.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, my turn, my turn. Let me speak.
It's the show-off moment.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, depending on the concerto, some concertos have shorter ones and some concertos have longer ones. So as I said, the second concerto that I'll be playing, the big chunk of the cadenza lies in the first movement, right till the end. This cadenza was actually written by Beethoven himself. But as Bang Yan said, you know, the first three concertos, he was able to play and perform because he, you know, he still could hear. During his time when he performed it, his cadenza would vary from performance to performance. To document this is a little bit difficult because every performance would be different. And so he kind of like, after 20 years, he's like, you know what, I think I should write this down so that, you know, my students can have a record of this. So that's how the cadenza that I'll be playing on Saturday was written 20 years after he started the work. And so that is the documented cadenza.
Which is very, for me, very fascinating is that we tend to think of classical music as something that's reified and fixed and ossified.
During the time,
it's all very much like a jazz
music. Improvisation is a big part of it all. I mean, originally, like in a lot of Mozart's concertos, for example, the soloist is supposed to improvise, well, technically on the spot, but most soloists would practice their cadenzas. So you get a sort of, it's actually like jazz where, you know, somebody takes over for a few minutes, a sort of shock and deary session. So and then the soloists will improvise their part, and then at the end of it, the orchestra joins in. But from Beethoven, he started writing quite a lot of his own cadenza because possibly he couldn't stand what other people are doing, so he just wanted to set it in stone what he wants.
So will you be improvising, Sylvia?
No, at all. But I'm glad Beethoven wrote something for us to play.
But I suppose you could hold some notes much longer.
Yes, it's
to
free.
The way based on how you're feeling at that point, or keep the silences longer too.
Yes,
your
rests.
Yeah, definitely those passages are the freest. And every pianist will have their own input, their own way of playing it.
So I guess that's when the interpretation by the specific pianist becomes most apparent. And people who are listening to it and just say, yeah, I like that interpretation.
I think what makes live music so interesting, because like all of us tell a story. It's like, you know, you can play the second concerto, he can play the second concerto. But what makes you different is that you're telling the same story, but you're telling it in a different way. And I think, you know, we pay to listen to how you speak and tell us that story.
Sylvia, you're playing
the
fourth one. And who is playing the third?
Vincent, who is in Penang.
So the 16-year-old.
Yes.
Oh, is he 16 already?
Yeah, 16.
I was thinking of him as the 14-year-old.
What's the mood of your piece, Sylvia?
Oh, that's the challenging part, because it's not as straightforward as the previous three concertos. For me, the challenge is to find the right temperature for this piece, particularly the first movement. It's probably the most poetic and lyrical concerto among all five. More introspective and reflective.
So quieter?
Quieter, but still intensely dramatic.
And then, Bang Yan, you close the whole cycle with your number five.
Yes, the last one for the oldest one. it's the nickname is Emperor Concerto, but Beethoven, like actually many of his sonatas, he didn't give this nickname himself. I think his enterprising publisher gave it the name. Something with a nickname always sells better, I think.
Why Emperor?
Well, I suppose it's quite noble, and it's very muscular and very sort of larger scale than any of the first four concertos, very symphonic, but it does have quite a sublime second movement that runs straight into the last movement. It's also quite unusual. I mean, from the fourth concerto, it's fairly unusual because it starts off with a soloist. Usually in the concerto, the whole orchestra begins, and at some point, the soloist joins in. But with the fourth, he begins with one phrase with the soloist. And in the Emperor Concerto, in the first movement, as soon as the orchestra plays a loud first chord, the piano launches in basically a cadenza. So instead of a cadenza at the end of the movement, we have it right at the beginning.
And you have five pieces and you will be playing over 2 days. How do you create a sense of unity for this? What do you have to do to give this performance a kind of coherence?
Well, we use the same piano. it is the same style, but it is actually quite a good document of how Beethoven developed as a composer. It's like a journey from the earliest second concerto when he wanted to make his mark as a composer, and then on to later ones where he was much more experimental and he started doing things that no other composers has ever done in a concerto and so on. So it's quite a journey from fairly early years when he was a teenager to a ripe old 40-something-year-old when he wrote the Emperor.
Actually, he died quite young, 57 years old, right?
I think during that time, that's
long.
Yeah, that's fairly long life.
Well, we're looking forward to this concert. Beethoven Complete is the 11th outing by the 5-year-old Selangor Philharmonic Orchestra, a community group of musicians made up of both professionals and others who are serious about performing music. We've just spoken to Sylvia Low, Low Bang Hien, and Carolyn Low, who are all performing, and the other two who will be performing are Vincent Ong, 16-year-old from Penang, and Chi Su Yen. The performances of Beethoven Complete will be done under the baton of Dr. Peter Hesudasan, a cardiologist and a musician. Because the group is performing the complete Beethoven Piano Concerto cycle, performances will go over 2 days, Saturday, July 29th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, July 30th at 3 p.m. at the PJ Civic Auditorium. Tickets are priced thus. For single performance, 40 ringgit, and for both performances, 60 ringgit, and if you want premium seats, 60 for one and 100 for both. This is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.